Welcome to the More Perfect Union, the podcast that offers real debate without the hate. And as I say that, I see DJ taking a swig of beer. Hey, everybody, I'm Kevin Kelton, a writer and social media political activist, and I'm not drinking this morning because I'm in Los Angeles, California, and it's still the AM.
I'm Rebecca Kushmider, a social policy advocate and freelance writer from Kensington, Maryland, and I'm drunk on chocolate because it's Easter.
I'm DJ McGuire, a cost estimator and musician from Suffolk, Virginia, and as everyone tells me, I suck at this when I'm sober. Of course I'm drunk.
And I'm Greg Matuszak, a former political activist and a teacher who is not yet expelled from Cincinnati, Ohio. Thank you, Donald Trump.
DJ, I want to point out a possible flaw in your logic. When everybody says you suck at this when you're sober, what makes you think that you're actually good at it when you're drunk?
Because I don't say anything on the episodes where I'm drunk.
Maybe you just don't listen.
That's possible. But
you're like, you're my best friend.
I can't rule that out.
You're great.
I love you, man. No, really.
I love you, man.
Let me.
You're the best.
Let me just say I recognize the criticisms more when I'm sober. And leave it at that.
You read the criticisms when you're sober. When you're drunk, you don't care.
Yeah, we think you're the best.
I'm just teasing
you. You're
the
best, man.
Hey, but I'll tell you, there's not only a difference between being sober and being drunk, but there's also apparently a big difference between liberals and conservatives in this country, especially what they like to watch on TV. Guys,
yeah.
Who's the new darling of the sitcom world again this week and probably for the next 2 or 4 or 5
Roseanne
years?
Roseanne Barr.
Years. Do you think it's going to go that long?
I'm fascinated by this because Roseanne Barr here in Cincinnati is known for like one thing, and she is probably the worst rendition of the national anthem.
Oh, I'd forgotten that. She did a terrible job on that. She can't sing to save her life.
No, she can't.
Can she not sing?
She also grabbed her crotch and spit at the end of it.
Well, she was imitating a baseball player. It wasn't that she was... Like, because baseball players grab their crotch and spit. That's what she was trying to reference.
Yeah, but you don't do that at the end of the national anthem.
You do if you're a comedian, maybe.
And that happened in Cincinnati, Ohio, and she was not asked back for an encore. And it was strange. No one said, brava, brava.
But let's talk about the new incarnation of Roseanne, who apparently on television and in real life is a rabid Trump supporter.
Yeah, and actually her show had the highest reboot ratings of all of the reboots, including like Will and Grace, Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, and a lot of these other liberal shows. And in addition to that, it had the highest ratings in very conservative markets, such as, I'm going to say this, Cincinnati, Ohio, Detroit, Michigan, Pennsylvania, all these places. She crushed it. Just crushed it.
Of course she did, because they essentially this was advertised as the sitcom for Trump supporters. So every member of the Trump and proletariat sat on their butts. Not all of them are fat. I need to be careful.
So careful there, dude.
They all made sure they were watching. Everyone understood that this would be essentially a scoreboard moment in politics. That's what TV has become, or this TV show has become. I did not understand why Roseanne was funny the first time. I certainly don't understand why she's funny now. But, you know, I'm guessing a lot of people who watched it didn't really care whether it was funny or not. It was about a way to put the middle finger to the elites and say, yes, this is why Donald Trump won moment. And ABC decided, hey, we can make some money off of it, so let's go.
Yeah.
You know, what's funny is the story, it wasn't like a huge political show. There was an interracial relationship. There was one of the younger children had gender questions, about gender fluidity, which was handled very, I don't want to say non-Midwestern-y, but was very nicely, actually, and very maturely. And not ways that this current administration would say, like, no, you have to use your this bathroom that you were born with. So how political was it? Well, there was a speech given about, well, this is why I support Donald Trump. But besides that, as far as policy, I think it was a show that, you know, both sides could enjoy. But besides that, it wasn't very political. But we go back to that whole thing about how liberals watch TV and the shows that they like and conservatives watch TV. And I don't know if you guys have ever thought about that, but there's a whole thing.
No, because I refuse to watch TV with a conservative, so I wouldn't know.
They watch upside down, Kevin. They like stand on their heads. That's the big difference. It's a physical change.
This is my stand-up routine where I go, liberals watch TVs like this, and conservatives watch TVs like this. No, and you see this. Most conservatives, and studies have shown this, and this is not my, like, oh, this is Greg's crazy theory. No, conservatives tend to watch a lot of police procedure, your CSIs, your NCISs. I guess they like alphabets. Blue Bloods. Scorpion is a big show they like. Anything like that. Tom Selleck is a huge draw for conservatives.
Well, yeah, Tom Selleck's hot.
Yes. Liberals tend to like, if you put the word critically acclaimed on something, they tend to like it. Also, liberals tend to like things more, they are drawn more to cable, more so than conservatives, so Netflix dramas, HBO, but there are shows that they both like, Walking Dead.
So basically, everyone really wants to know what to do in the zombie apocalypse. That's
a problem we all have.
Surviving a zombie apocalypse transcends political divides. Mm-hmm.
American Idol is a show that both liberals and conservatives, you know, watch, or at least they lie and say, oh, you know, well, I don't really watch it, but they do watch it. This is one that I found really interesting, is shows with a main character with a major flaw is something that liberals like.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, which Suits was one that liberals really liked, where you had like this main character who's smart and had everything, but he has like this hidden past. Or Breaking Bad was another one that liberals really liked, but conservatives really didn't care for, which I was like, Breaking Bad's one of the greatest shows in the world. How could you not like that show? Mad Men was another one that liberals really liked, where you had a major flaw in a character, main character. Reality shows went back and forth. Both of them seemed to like. The Kardashians was one that I was shocked about.
Wait, liberals and conservatives like Kardashians, or liberals like Kardashians?
Across the board. Across the
What's
board.
What's not to like? I love me the Kardashians, I'm telling you.
And I knew you'd say that.
Everybody likes a dumpster fire. Greg, quick question. You left one genre out. Who is more likely to watch sci-fi stuff?
You know, I didn't say fantasy. Game of Thrones was on both lists. The Flash was only on the conservative list. And I can't tell if it's because the Flash is not a flawed character. It's the CW Flash. And Arrow was also on the conservative list, although is he a flawed character? And some people think that's weak tea. Supernatural was on the liberal list. I think I mentioned Game of Thrones was on both.
Yes, you did.
And Big Bang Theory was on both, but Big Bang Theory is a Chuck Lorre film show, which is kind of lowest common denominator.
There's actually a little known law in the United States that one Chuck Lorre show every year has to be in the top 10 TV series.
Yeah, exactly. So those of us who are nerds are kind of like, is it nerd? Is it just pandering nerd? So it's a good question, DJ, but I think both of us kind of get it.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I never really watched the show either. I have a lot of friends who've worked on it. I know people that were involved in producing it. Let me say this. She makes a very good product. She really does. I didn't happen to see this week's show, but I saw the clips and the jokes about Trump that all the news shows are showing. And they do it well. I'm not crazy about making him into a lovable character, but I think conservatives should be able to have entertainment that they enjoy. They said for years that there was only Real Time with Bill Maher and The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. And, you know, where was conservative comedy? Let them have conservative comedy. That's fine.
Yeah.
And by the way, this isn't the first sitcom of the modern era that was pro-Trump. Last Man Standing with Tim Allen was also, he played a conservative who disliked Obama and then liked Trump.
I'm seeing whispers are trying to bring that back now, too.
That's more like a whisper than anything else.
Was that show any good? That's part of the question. It can be conservative all you want. Are they any good? The original Roseanne show, when you watch the first few seasons of that, it was really good writing and the characters were interesting and relatable. And I remember watching it and being actually very excited about it because my mom and I had caught Roseanne doing an appearance on Carson when she was barely known, and we thought she was hilarious.
She is hilarious.
Her stand up was so good, talking about marriage and, you know, the experience of being a woman and a stay-at-home mom. And the first few seasons of her show, it was a family that you really liked and, you know, you felt an affinity for them. If she's doing that again now, I didn't see this week's episode. If she's doing that again now, then, yeah, that's as Kevin said, a good product. People will watch it.
Yeah. And here's the thing that I find more interesting. It's not so much that there's a sitcom where a character or characters happen to like Donald Trump. That's fine. What I find more interesting is that Roseanne Barr, the human being, likes Donald Trump. And I've read, you know, over the last several months about a couple of other... No. I'm saying this very seriously.
No. I just think... Wait. Before we go on, I'm going to stop you. Okay. I just find it interesting that a human being likes Donald Trump. I'm going to stop you with that.
You caught that, didn't you?
You know, I find it fine that Roseanne Barr, the computer programmer, I find it funny. Fine that Roseanne Barr, the table chair, likes her. That's fine. But Roseanne Barr, the human being, likes him. Well, that's impossible. Totally illogical. But go on. I'm sorry.
It is illogical, but actually that's the point I was trying to bring up. you stumped me there, Greg. That's great. I think it's very funny. But there's been a couple of people, and maybe you guys could help me because off the top of my mind, I'm not thinking of who they are. But there are some other well-known celebrities who have made it a point of letting us know that they are also Trump supporters. And what I find interesting is that those couple of people that I've noticed this in, it's because they are Donald Trump. Roseanne Barr was Donald Trump before Trump even was doing The Apprentice. You know, she likes to be, you know, anti-authoritarian or anti-establishment. She likes to take a contrarian point of view. She'll say whatever is on her mind. She's super duper rich, or at least she was a few years ago. And she likes being in the limelight for being, you know, the person who says the things that nobody else will say or do, going back to the national anthem. So I find that it's not that surprising that she likes him, but I don't think that it really – I mean, listen, Donald Trump and Roseanne Barr have one thing in common. Neither of them have anything in common with the people who believe in them.
Well, at this point that may be true of Roseanne – but she does at least have a kernel inside her that was a working class person, was a person who had to struggle and work for what she had. So that's a principal difference between her and Donald Trump. And I think there are people who feel that, you know, that say, well, you know, she came up from the bottom, and understand that.
Yeah, but to some extent, and this is, I think, one of the things that people do not really understand. In order to understand Donald Trump, you also have to understand the New York City in which he grew up. Anywhere outside of New York City, the notion of Donald Trump being an outsider, being a populist, being a working class guy is utterly ridiculous. on Manhattan Island, where anybody without an eight-figure income is considered working class and boorish and outside, and those people who live in rent-controlled apartments or up in Harlem or in the less desirable places of the city, Donald Trump the outsider makes sense because he was an outsider in the posh parts of Manhattan Island. He was considered working class because he didn't have an eight-figure income, and neither did his father. And Donald Trump has taken that resentment of Manhattan Island, and he's essentially he's looked out across his voters, his people, if you will, and he says, you know what? To them, the Democratic Party or Wall Street or whoever he's railing against, they are the Manhattan old rich guys that I ran into trouble with in the 60s and 70s and 80s and who hated me and who hated everything I stood for. That is what has enabled him to be the kind of person and the politician he is. He is 1960s post-war Brooklyn. That Brooklyn doesn't exist anymore, which is why nobody outside of New York City can understand what the hell Donald Trump is about. But if you remember Brooklyn back then Donald Trump makes a little more sense. He's just the last person who remembers it.
Right, but he's built an entire persecution complex and
yes,
sold an entire persecution
that's
complex
exactly what it
based
is.
On the fact that he wasn't an Upper East Side blue blood.
Exactly. That's exactly
and
it.
He's always resented not being an Upper East Side blue blood.
So you know which conservative makes me even more upset than both Donald Trump and Roseanne combined? Laura effing Ingraham, who I've never liked for a moment of her existence on Earth. And she took it to another level this week when she went after Parkland survivor David Hogg. Well, guys, the outcome, as we know, is that he's winning, she's losing, or at least she's losing a lot of sponsors. Do you think she'll win him back, or do you think that this is actually going to ding her career?
You know, I have been thinking about this nonstop since it happened. First of all, the original statement she made where she was saying, oh, look at David Hogg complaining that he didn't get into college. Okay, even if you're not
talking
about...
Didn't get into UCLA. He got into college.
Right. He got into Caltech. I mean, it's not like he... Yeah. But even if this kid wasn't a shooting survivor, to berate a teenager for being disappointed about a college rejection is just heartless, because that is a legitimately disappointing thing. It's not like he's crying about something that is objectively not that bad. Not getting into college sucks. It hurts. And, you know,
well,
to
first
go
of all,
on Twitter
he wasn't
and say,
crying about it. He was being interviewed and he told the truth. He said, these are where I applied. I didn't get into these schools, but I did, you know, he didn't go on TV whining about it.
Well, I had also seen him on Twitter before the interview saying, "Ah, another college rejection letter looks like a gap year's in my future." But even so, that's not something to like. You don't kick a kid when he's down over college. She was being a jerk just on the face of it. As for the fact that sponsors are jumping ship, this gets into marketing 101 and demographics 101. The average Fox viewer is 65 or older. The median age of Fox viewers is about 68 years old. If you're Honda and you make a product that people only buy once every 5 years, whose customer loyalty are you more interested in, the 68-year-old or the 17-year-old? If you're looking longitudinally at markets, these kids are a more desirable demographic than Laura Ingraham. Now, if I'm a sponsor, I'll look at this for a quarter, you know, like I'll pull my ads for a quarter and see what it does to sales and see if, you know, I take a ding from it and then I might creep back in if I feel like it's to my benefit. But that's something that a lot of Fox viewers maybe need to face about themselves, that they're in the sunset and that corporate America might not love them anymore.
Another thing that Fox viewers, the average Fox viewer should face is that many of them would have trouble getting a 200 on the SATs. So, you know,
I wouldn't necessarily go that far.
But how many, do you think more than 50% of them ever went to college, DJ?
Say that again?
Do you think more than half of Fox viewers, the average Fox viewer, do you think they went to college?
No.
So then why are they laughing at David Hogg?
Because they're mean, spiteful little people?
Yes.
Well, here's,
that's exactly
right. And here's the thing. This is part of a larger problem with the conservative movement as a whole. The conservative movement really came into its own in the 1970s, in reaction to the economic shocks and the damage from the Vietnam and the shock from the loss of Vietnam and various other things. It is a, at that point, it was considered a young movement. It did very well among voters in their 20s, among voters even in their teens in the 1980s, folks just a little older than I am. The movement has aged, and it has not it has done almost nothing to renew itself. I mean, I remember listening to Laura Ingraham on talk radio back 15, 20 years ago. She was a sharp lawyer who had very insightful points to make, interesting points to make. As the movement has aged, she and Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh and all of them have just have been transformed into caricatures of themselves, because no one has bothered to really, no one has really bothered to renew and refresh the movement. They're pulling a lot of, they're still pulling policy ideas out of from the 1980s. They're still pulling talking points from the 1980s. They haven't adjusted to the times. That's why Fox News viewership is older, because they really can't attract anyone who is 50 or under. I was one of the very few of my generation who stayed with the Republican Party as long as I did. And that's simply because, like I said, it is growing older. And unless it finds some way to refresh itself and revive itself, it's going to die with its viewership. And Laura Ingraham is finding that out. Sean Hannity will find that out, because eventually their corporate sponsors, who have to look at the whole market, not just a market that has been aging and that is continuing to age, they will start saying, you know, this is not the place I want to do this. And by the time it's over, the only folks who will be advertising on Fox News repeatedly, including those two shows, are folks selling vitamins and Depends, and that's going to be about it.
Okay, let me add this real quick. According to a study, about one fourth of Fox News readers have a college degree. Okay, so about a quarter of them. Okay, which is pretty bad. But in general, let's put this in perspective. New York Times, does anyone want to guess what the average New York Times readers have a college degree?
98%?
Have a degree? I'd say a third. have a degree, I'd go with a third.
So let's have DJ and I now debate this a half an hour.
Yeah. No, it's actually about it's 56%.
So what? But what's the what? In general population numbers.
Let's put that in perspective.
How many people in the general population have college degrees?
I could look that up too, but let's put that in. How many people, as far as like the Daily Show, who watch the Daily Show?
All of them. Every single one of them has a college degree. Or they're actually in college. 45%.
So let's go back to the original statement, though, of picking on a kid. You know, we don't pick on kids on this podcast. We've talked about that before. You know, we don't pick on Barron. We've never on the show picked on Barron. We've never mentioned him in a negative light. We've never said, I don't think we've even said, gosh, we feel sorry for him being Donald Trump's son, because that's a shitty thing to say too.
Kevin was upset that Barron might be taller than he is. I remember Kevin.
Yes, that's true. That son of a bitch.
See, a picture of Barron, and Barron's like this, you know, this beanpole of a kid. He's really
well.
Tall.
I don't even think that's that bad. But we don't pick on kids, and I think we've said this before. It's wrong. What Laura Ingraham has found out, that freedom of speech isn't always free. Okay, and she's found that out the hard way. And having your sponsors pulled on you, that's a problem. But just like these kids who walked out of school, who got detentions and things like that, it's not always easy. There are consequences to your actions.
Well, you know, Laura Ingraham might be losing sponsors, but you know who's not losing sponsors? The More Perfect Union podcast.
Right on.
And in
you
fact,
are so
we're
good at this, Kevin.
We are thrilled to welcome back one of our biggest sponsors, HelloFresh. And as everybody who listens to this show and everybody who watches television in the United States now knows, HelloFresh is the company that delivers great home cookable meals right to your doorstep. They run about $10 per person, maybe a little bit more, but it's pretty close to that. The whole package comes to your doorstep on like a Monday or a Tuesday. Everything you needed is in there. The ingredients are all in there. They have like a 6 or 7 step recipe card that is so simple to follow.
Even DJ can do it.
Even DJ has done it. DJ, you've tried it. You liked it, right?
Yes, I did like it. It was quite good.
Jessica and I use it every week. She gets a package of 2 or 3 meals. We post the photos. You guys have seen them on Facebook. They come out looking
delicious.
They look like restaurant dishes. They taste great. And you've used it, Rebecca, with your family.
Yeah.
You liked it, right?
Yeah. No, I've done the family meals. They're great.
So, again, if you'd like to do less going out to eat or, you know, less bringing in Chinese food, if you'd like to serve your boyfriend or your girlfriend or your husband or your wife or your kids or your mom and your dad a nice home-cooked meal that you can take pride in having created, try HelloFresh. And here's how to do it. Go to HelloFresh.com and use the promo code MOREPERFECT30. MOREPERFECT and the number 30. No spaces, no capital letters. If you put that in, you'll get $30 off your first order. And if you know how to boil water and toast, you're going to be fine. So try HelloFresh. We think you're going to really like it.
Mother's Day is coming. This would be a good Mother's Day gift. Order some HelloFresh and cook it for mom. I'm telling you.
That's a great idea. Or send it to mom's house. Do you guys remember? Do you remember from the Everybody Loves Raymond show? The pilot episode had a great gag in it, where Ray ordered for his parents as a loving gift the Fruit of the Month Club. And his mother went nuts because they were getting all this fruit delivered to their house every week and she didn't know what to do with it.
Oh my God, that's like a CSA package when you get all the kale.
No, I don't remember that one, but the lead actress in that, Patricia...
Keaton.
Keaton.
Patricia
Keaton.
Keaton,
you're right. I'm sorry. Keaton. I got my Patricia's confused.
Is a Trump supporter also, by the way.
Is she? I knew she was very conservative, but I didn't know she was an all-out Trump supporter.
She is an all-out Trump supporter, since we're talking about that. Anyways, so.
I'll tell you who are a Trump supporters, doing another one of my Kevin Kelton segues. Those 60,
yes, yes.
Those 60 Russian diplomats that Trump...
Former Russian diplomats.
that Trump expelled this week.
This is not an April Fool's Day joke. Hey, let's hear it for Trump. And I know our expectations are low, but he did a great job this week. I mean, really, he did the right thing, and he stepped up. Hey,
you know what?
Round of applause.
You're right. You know, I'm going to join you on this Trump bandwagon, Greg, because...
I can't tell if you're being sarcastic now.
No, I'm actually being sincere. He did
Stop
the right
being
thing.
An asshole. Stop being an asshole, Kevin.
Well,
I mean it.
No, I mean, it's the same thing that Obama did, only Trump actually sent more of them out of the country. And
I know!
And they both handled it approximately the same way. I don't think Obama came out and made a big statement about, I'm sending 39 Russian diplomats out of the country. He just did it, and so did Trump.
I know!
So I'm agreeing
Let's
with you,
Greg.
Let's
hear it. Let's pull out the Denise
Williams
tune.
A few weeks ago, I said I thought Trump was in the middle of a manic episode, and he was making a lot of really last-minute decisions without advice from other people. His energy seemed to be really off the charts. He was tweeting a lot. He felt really frantic, and that's sort of, I feel like that's dialed down. And maybe he's listening to his advisors again, and whatever episode he was having, he cycled out of it. And, and so John Kelly expelled the Russian diplomats because Trump was golfing and, you know, is letting other people do it for us.
I love how you give a compliment. I mean, we couldn't just have one nice moment.
I am given no ground on this guy. You know, broken clocks are right twice a day, but they're still broken.
I want you to write my eulogy. I really do. You know.
No, don't die, Greg. Don't die. Live, Greg, live.
I will always acknowledge where Trump has done what I think is right. I have done it before, and I'm doing it here. The expulsions were the right thing to do, and I am glad he did them. The reason, however, why it has so much of an impact is because it is so unusual for him. He still, yes, Throughout all of this, he still hasn't criticized Vladimir Putin or the Vladimir Putin regime. He didn't say, I don't think he actually tweeted anything about the expulsions, other than maybe something perfunctory. He let the administrative bureaucracy do it for him. He himself still has too close of an affinity to Moscow and too close of an affinity to the Kremlin. This is really the exception that proves the rule, I fear.
DJ, I had a quick question, and I thought you might be the person who would know this. A bunch of countries expelled Russian diplomats in the wake of the nerve agent. And by the way, I've heard that there's potential for one of the victims of that to recover, which is very good news. And I heard that Russia expelled a number of U.S. diplomats in retaliation for our expulsion. Did Putin also expel diplomats from the other NATO countries that took action, or is he just mad at us?
As I understand it, he has expelled diplomats from other countries. He hasn't gone through the full list yet, but I know Canada has been informed, because Canada kicked out 4 Russian diplomats, and they have been informed that 4 of their own diplomats will soon be headed home as soon as the regime can figure out which ones they want to kick out. So yes, he is
okay.
The regime is kicking out diplomats from all of the countries that kicked Russian diplomats out.
All right. I hadn't heard any reporting on that, and I was just curious how that was playing out.
Right. The thing that's kind of interesting, though, is that Russia is blaming America for spearheading the mass, even though we're just going along with it.
Yeah, I really thought that was Theresa May who spearheaded that.
Yeah, I didn't understand that. Even by Putin standards, that makes no sense whatsoever.
Well, we are the great, great evil. No, we're the great Satan in Iran.
That's Iran.
What are we to Russia? What do they call us?
That depends on what Putin has to drink that morning. From what I've actually read, he's more angry at Great Britain than at us. They say nasty things about, and again, Putin's regime does the same thing. And whenever they bash us, they don't bash Donald Trump particularly, because they're not stupid. But as far as I understand, granted, it may be because I read British press more than American press these days, but as I understood it, Moscow was aiming its fire much more at the UK than the US.
So let's move on. Hey, let's talk about this switchover at the Veterans Administration. I think this was a big story in the news. This guy, David Shulkin, got the boot again via a tweet, right? Or something like that?
Yep.
Yeah.
And then Trump nominated for his new VA secretary, Dr. Ronnie Jackson.
Oh.
Yeah, his doctor.
Oh my gosh.
And actually, Kevin, your response to this explains why Rear Admiral Jackson could very well be confirmed. Because it says something about the danger that Trump's opposition will keep falling into.
Well, I think it's a good point. Let me just explain what I said, and then I'll let you finish, because I'm glad you brought this up. So here's my theory. First of all, I liked the man in the press conference. I assume he's a good doctor. I assume he's a good guy. I think he lied in that press conference about Trump's height and weight. And here's my theory on that. He said in the press conference that Trump came in at 6'3" and 239 pounds. Now, everyone who can Google knows that Donald Trump is only 6'2", maybe even 6'1". If you see him standing next to President Obama or Jeb Bush, who are both legitimately 6'3", he's quite a bit shorter than them. Here's my theory. Trump went to his physical, and they weighed him, and they took his height, and they said, Mr. President, I'm afraid we have to tell you you fall slightly into the obese category. And Trump said, oh no. Oh no, 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 no. That is not going in my official record that the media is going to, pounce on like vultures. He said, get me under obese. I don't care how you do it. Make me under obese officially. And so what they did was, they figured, well, if we stretch his height an inch or two, and if we lower his weight a couple of pounds, he will be just under obese. And that's what they did. So what I said on Facebook this week in open fire was that I'm glad that Ronnie Jackson is going to have to be confirmed by the Senate, because some Democratic senator is going to ask him, Dr. Jackson, did you in fact take the president's height and weight? And if not, who did? And will you say here under oath that the information you gave in that press conference about him being 6'3" and 239 pounds is indeed correct? I want to hear him answer that question. DJ, go ahead.
And that soliloquy is why Jackson will probably get confirmed, because none of that addresses the real problem here, which is that Jackson has no real managerial experience whatsoever.
They'll ask him about that too.
And those are the more interesting questions. The VA is the second largest government agency, and he's never managed more than 100 people. He's not qualified to manage something the size of the VA.
Exactly. But if we all get wrapped around the axle about what he did and didn't measure about Donald Trump, it's going to be the Elizabeth Warren, she persisted nonsense all over again. There were plenty of ways. I'm serious. I'm still bringing this up. There were plenty of reasons for folks on the center right to oppose Jeff Sessions' confirmation. The Democrats let all of that get buried and covered by Elizabeth Warren throwing a fit on the Senate floor and doing exactly what Mitch McConnell wanted her to do to distract everybody from the very real problems Jeff Sessions had on civil liberties in general, on civil asset forfeiture reform in particular, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. None of that mattered as soon as it became all about Mitch McConnell versus Elizabeth Warren. All we need to do is have one Democratic senator throw that kind of question out, and every Republican will fall in line and go, this is about the integrity of a naval rear admiral and somebody blah, 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 blah. And all of the very pertinent and important management questions will get buried, and no one will pay any attention no matter how often they're asked. I beseech Democrats on the Senate floor.
I can't imagine why Chuck Schumer doesn't hire you.
I beseech them. Don't fall for this trap. Thank you.
All right, let's start. Your big issue is that this guy isn't qualified, and yet he still may get through a Senate confirmation hearing for a large government or a large position in this administration. And yet we see this happen so many times before, such as Betsy DeVos, Ben Carson, Rick Perry. I mean, I could write a song about how many times this has gone on. Me and Harry Connick Jr. could sing this song in harmony. But I mean, it's hysterical how many times. Rob Portman, my horrible senator from Ohio, actually said, yes, Betsy DeVos is really, I hear you. There's a lot of misgivings about Betsy DeVos, but I've met her and she seems like a fine person, even though she's, you know, stomps on puppies and things like that. Although that wasn't his exact words. But yeah, and that's what's going to happen. They're going to say, yeah, he's not really qualified, but you know,
but the president, he's the president's choice, that's what they'll say.
He's a rear admiral, and we can't say no to a Navy man. Sure.
Well, and here's the underbelly of all this. Shulkin, the first place he went after getting fired via tweet was to NPR, and he gave an interview wherein he stated that the reason he was fired was actually because he wasn't moving quickly enough to privatizing the VA, which has been a major talking point of the far right and of Trump himself for a long time. So the idea of bringing in this wildly unqualified and yet also somehow qualified for confirmation guy to run the VA is quite devious. Like he'll make it through confirmation. I don't have any doubt. But he also won't be good at running the VA because he's never managed anything, and things will get, you know, even more mired in problems than they already are. And then Trump and all of his cronies will point to it and go, well, would you look? Even a rear admiral can't fix this. We're going to have to privatize the VA. They bought it. Now they're going to break it, and then they're going to sell it or something.
I'm going to go out on a limb. I don't think this guy is ever going to hit a confirmation hearing. I think he's going to withdraw. But that's my prediction. It's a long shot prediction. We'll find out in a few weeks or a few months whether I'm right or wrong.
The More Perfect Union, real debate without the hate, now heard on iTunes and Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, Greg, what else is in the news this week that we should be talking about? You know, today's April Fool's Day. What is on the April Fool's horizon?
Oh, so this is something that if you guys are on the interweb and you follow websites like 4chan and you have no time, this is something you've probably heard about. And it's a conspiracy theory, which I love conspiracy theories. This is my favorite one for the far right. And this makes Pizzagate look like, oh, well, that could actually happen. And it's called The Storm. And I want to take a couple minutes. If you haven't heard about it, it's hysterical. And pretty much the gist of it is there's a guy who calls themselves Q. Just Q, not C-U-E.
So wait, is he when calling himself Q, is he referring to James Bond or is he referring to Star Trek The Next Generation?
No, we don't know. But about 7-8 months ago, he started posting and saying like really cryptic things like on Small Business Day, Trump will use the word small. Not kidding. I'm not kidding. And saying things like, you know, Trump is in Air Force One and he's going to be here. And just ridiculous things like are pretty easy guesses if you are. Anyways, the gist of it is that Trump is cooperating with Mueller. The whole thing was set up by Trump not to investigate Russia, not to investigate. Well, it was. But to take down Obama Hillary, who was involved with Putin. This whole thing is to take down this Obama Hillary Putin collusion. And through this whole thing, Trump is just playing this character of like, oh, Mueller, you are. And every time he takes down someone, it's not real. Every time they're just bringing him in to make it look like Obama can like let his guard down and Hillary can take her guard. Everything is just, and he's like, did you see that? It's completely fake. Everything. And what's worse is it started out with like just a couple hundred people, but now it's like tens of thousands of people are like, oh yeah. And there will come a day, they're saying this, that Trump is going to say, look, because, you know, Obama and all his people are going to Trump's going to declare martial law for like 2 days and they're just going to arrest all the Democrats. It's going to happen. And he keeps saying this. And there's literally tens of thousands of people who believe this. And it's so ridiculous. So if you have not followed it, it's now worth following. New York Magazine just did an article about it. And I honestly believe it's one of the greatest April Fool's Day joke. And the day that Trump is actually led out handcuffs.
oh, this from the guy who's the biggest Trump supporter here.
Yeah.
I know, I am. But, or at least when Jared Kushner's like led out and Trump is like, no.
Jared Kushner perp walk, baby.
Yeah. That's going to be the various. You know, people are going to be like, it's okay. It's okay. The storm is coming. But it's awesome.
So the storm is going to be the martial law where like us and Obama and Hillary are all going to get arrested because Mueller is actually a double agent.
And no, he's Paul not Manif- a double agent.
He's working for Trump. He's on covert duty.
Yeah.
Okay. And Paul Trump- Manafort isn't really wearing two different, tracking bracelets and on house arrest. He's actually been shipped off to like some Paradise Island somewhere.
He is, but Manafort, through this whole thing, it's saying like Manafort actually was doing dirty work for Obama and Hillary.
Oh, that's what he's actually arrested for. And he was trying to infiltrate the Trump campaign.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. The whole thing is
this
just
is all
so
becoming
ridiculous.
Clear to me now.
It's like fan fiction. It's almost like Trump erotica.
You know, okay, I mean, Greg, honestly, yeah. I mean, I actually did come up with something more credible in about 15 minutes in reaction to the Sergei Skripal attack. We talked about it earlier, led to the expulsion of the Russian diplomats. That attack was actually a counterattack by Putin after Obama and Hillary and David Cameron ordered the murder of hundreds of Russian spies and Russian agents covertly placed all throughout the country in an attempt to allow Hillary to go to war with Putin, with Russia, had she been elected in 2016. And they're going to reveal all that they had done against these spies as a prelude to war. And Putin is now taking revenge against America for what Obama and Hillary did to Russians all throughout the world during the Obama administration. And Trump is being kept in the dark about this because people are afraid to give him the truth about what Obama and Hillary and John Kerry actually did during their 8 years in power.
Yeah. You know what all of this makes me think of? Because obviously the United States is under attack from Russia in one form or another. One of my favorite war movies was Red Dawn. And I think we're having a modern Red Dawn now, where we're being infiltrated by Russia, but without all of the machine guns.
It won't be Red Dawn, Kevin. The remake of Red Dawn will actually be called White Dawn, because it will be a Putinist-like Russian regime that invades, and I'm using the air quotes now, Middle America to create a whites-only homeland, and thus they are welcomed by large chunks of the Trump and proletariat. And the Simon Bates character, instead of being like some mayor of some backwater Colorado town, will end up being like a governor or something, or maybe even a high-ranking federal administration official who goes perfectly along with all of the purges and the mass graves, so long as it's all people of color and members of the LGBTQ, etc. communities.
Who will be the Patrick Swayze character?
I don't know who the name...
The Rock.
I don't know who the Patrick Swayze character is, but I do. I think it was Powers Booth, who was the Air Force colonel.
Right.
Yeah, that'll be Nathan Lane.
Oh, that's awesome.
I know who the Patrick Swayze character would be in The White Dawn. Roseanne.
No.
And we bring it right back to the top of the circle.
We want to thank everybody for listening. Please follow us on Twitter at #MPUPodcast or #TheMorePerfectPodcast and on Facebook at facebook.com/MorePerfectUnionPodcast. And share our link on your Facebook timeline so your friends can discover us as well. This was a fun blast of a show. I really enjoyed this one, guys.
I got the actress to play the Patrick Swayze character. Lupita Nyong'o.
Ooh.
See, I would think the Patrick Swayze character would be Laverne Cox from Orange is the New Black. I think she's awesome.